It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. It can feel like we're living in an unpredictable time, but we're often expected to respond to complicated events with fully formed, clear-cut decisions and opinions, and fast. According to our next guest, though, there can be a lot of wisdom in saying, I'm not sure. In a new book, she looks into science, medicine, computer technology, and more, and says there's a lot to gain when we embrace uncertainty. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you're someone who embraces or avoids uncertainty in your life? Do you feel anxiety or maybe like you're paralyzed in decision-making in uncertain situations? Do you have questions about the latest science in how our brains deal with uncertainty? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Maggie Jackson is an award-winning author and journalist. Her newest book is called Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. Maggie, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, you have a track record in your books, a journalism, Maggie, of pursuing kind of off-the-beaten-path topics. What led you down the path of uncertainty?
Well, I kind of backed into the topic, actually. It was an uncertain beginning. But after I wrote a book called Distracted, which is about the science of attention and the erosion of focus in the society, I thought, well, what's the complement to focus? Well, thinking. So I kind of set off to write a book about what kinds of thinking we need in this fragmented, speed-driven age. The first chapter happened to be about uncertainty. And so I discovered two things. One, uncertainty was a lot more than just a chapter. But secondly, I discovered an incredible wealth of new research that actually is beginning to reveal how it works in our brain or why it doesn't lead to great, you know, doctoring and, what does daydreaming have to do with uncertainty? I discovered a lot of new science basically revealing uncertainty's wisdom, even though we think of it as this sort of shameful flaw to be unsure.
And you mentioned new research here. There hadn't been a lot of research on uncertainty. I think the default assumption was uncertainty is a bad thing that we can avoid and or ignore. We've treated uncertainty as a negative for a lot of our history.
Right, exactly. Because mainly because humans do need and want answers. And so that's an important starting point. But as well, our culture, even for hundreds of years, especially in the industrial age, has been very efficiency oriented. So achieving the task or getting to the outcome has kind of taken up the dominant attention in science. And even psychology was ignoring this liminal zone of being unsure, which is really about the space between the question and the answer. Early scientists would give MRI scanners to people, and they would completely ignore what people were doing, what their brains were doing when they were between tasks. It was really just about whether they did the task well or not. That's how one of the most major networks related to daydreaming was discovered by accident, because people's brains actually are far more active when they're doing nothing, when they're listening to silence, than they are when they're doing goal-oriented kind of work.
One thing that I really took away from your book, Maggie, is that in that time of uncertainty, when we're not sure what our response is or our decision, there's a lot going on that can be really valuable in helping us make that decision. What is going on in our brains at the moment that we can potentially harness?
Yes, the first important starting point is that uncertainty is good stress. Well, I mentioned that we need and want answers. So basically, we're geared to, when we meet up with something new or unexpected or ambiguous, we have a stress response. So you get a memo from the boss, or you get a traffic jam on a stretch of road where you've never had one before. And, you know, your heart might beat, your cortisol levels might go up. But at the same time, and this is the new science, your brain becomes more receptive to new data. Your attention improves. So scientists talk about curious eyes, and your working memory is bolstered. There's just a cascading effect from stress hormones that are actually related to what scientists call arousal, and I call wakefulness. So basically, as one neuroscientist told me, that's when you're uncertain, the brain is telling itself there's something to be learned here. So the unease is not something to be retreated from. It's actually an invitation to learn. And I just read a new study about doctors who were asked about sticky moments after they finished their clinical shifts. And lo and behold, the uncertain moments when they really didn't know what to do and it was stressful and it was difficult, those were the moments when their attention was heightened. And also they began to look ahead to see what resources they needed to fix the problem. So actually we wake up when we're uncertain. That's a really important kind of re-envisioning of what uncertainty is.
Maggie Jackson is with us talking about her new book. It's called Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think there's too much emphasis on being quickly decisive in different parts of our lives? Have you found ways to take those uncertain moments and learn from them? Join in at 800-642-1234. Maggie, you queued me up perfectly for an example I wanted to take out of your book. You were just talking about doctors. One of the most vivid scenes is you are observing a liver tumor surgery. Now, I would think somebody who's operating on a complicated piece of our human equipment in a difficult situation, I would think I want them to be bold and decisive and take that next move without thinking about it. Those kind of surgeons are embracing uncertainty to avoid errors. Can you talk us through what they're learning?
Right, exactly. Well, I went up to Toronto to visit surgeons and actually observe surgeries. I was in the operating room right next to the patient, and I was sort of looking to see whether uncertainty had a place when the situation was highly stressed and speed-driven, et cetera, because that's what our image of great expertise is. It's the sort of swaggering, efficient person who strides into the room or walks onto the, you know, scene of the fire and immediately knows what to do. But actually, it turns out that that's really a particular kind of expertise. So when you're learning, you gain expertise through those thousands of hours of practice, and you begin to know what to do in situations that you've seen before. You begin to rely on the heuristic shortcut thinking. But what really often happens is that those routine experts, when they're faced with a new problem, actually begin to fail because they're trotting out the old solutions. So years of experience are actually only weakly correlated or not correlated at all with accuracy in many, many different fields. I think in journalism, you know, just like the military or finance, we've seen the person who's seen it all before and they're still trotting out the same old story. Senior auditors, for example, actually are less good at finding embezzlement in the books than young students who are studying accounting. But the better kind of expertise is actually the person who's adaptive. Those kind of experts spend more time diagnosing a problem than even novices, because as I write in the book, they inhabit the question. They're, you know, forever testing, they widen their options. And so this is the kind of expertise that's really important when you're faced with a new situation. And, you know, my surgeon that I was witnessing in the operating room, he actually kind of came to a really terrible near miss that he luckily didn't do this terrible cutting of the bile duct, but it was a close call because he was all swagger. And as another surgeon told me, he was treating it like it was all routine. And that's not how we are able to better, you know, fix problems when they're new and complicated.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Georgia is with us in Madison. Hi there, Georgia.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about?
I have a fridge magnet. It's a quote from Annie Lamott, and it says, "The opposite of faith is not doubt, it's certainty." And I just wondered if your guest would have a comment about that.
Interesting. Annie is a fine guest to talk to. She's been on this show before. Georgia, thanks for that. You talk about a lot of different sources, philosophical, scientific, and others, Maggie, who are saying, certainty is sometimes an obstacle more than anything.
Right, exactly. And I think that's true whether or not you're talking about spheres of faith or whether you're in the workplace or what have you. And I think that, you know, people often ask me about the questions about faith, and I'm not a religious scholar by any means, and I didn't write about religion in the book. But I think that knowledge, when you are comfortable with uncertainty, is flexible and something that's constantly changing, constantly being built upon. You know, people who are really tolerant of uncertainty, and that's a psychological term, are actually more flexible thinkers who are more curious, and they treat knowledge as a kind of mutable tapestry whose strength is in the fact that it's constantly changing and growing. Whereas people who are intolerant, you know, that means fearful of the unknown, are treat knowledge as a rock that's there to defend, you know, and that's, those are two very, very different approaches to uncertainty. Because what I'm talking about here is not, there are two types of uncertainty that we should all, I should also preface to define what I mean by uncertainty. I mean, we've been talking about the psychology of uncertainty. Well, people, when we say uncertainty roils the stock markets, that's really a shorthand for the unknown. That's a shorthand for what we cannot know. And so, you know, you might get the great weather report with the probabilistic reasoning about how much snow is going to be dumped in your backyard next Tuesday, but you don't know whether it's 6 or 8 inches. Nobody knows. And that's the unknown, the uncertainty. But there's a different kind of uncertainty, which is the human response to the unknown. And that's where we can really change our attitudes and harness the wisdom of uncertainty. That's basically the human ability to recognize when they reach the limits of their knowledge. And isn't that a good thing to recognize when you reach the end of your knowledge? And then you can go forth from there. So I think that has a lot to do with both faith and everything else in life.
Georgia, thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to journalist and author Maggie Jackson. Her new book is Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you found ways to embrace uncertainty over the course of your life? Was there a decision that you made, or maybe you made with a committee or other group, where, you know, the certain obvious answer wasn't the right one in hindsight? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're picking up our conversation with Maggie Jackson about her new book, Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel pressure to have and express a position about complicated current events? Do you feel like uncertainty is rewarded or punished in today's climate? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Maggie, before we go back to our callers, I want to talk about kind of the incentive structure of our media and social media these days. It seems like in the media, you're supposed to have a hot take, a certain position to share with others. Same with social media or comments on an article. The people who have strong, decisive opinions are going to speak up. The people who aren't sure, they may not go online to type, I don't know how I feel about this. Are we weighting things away from embracing uncertainty?
Well, I think we are. And actually, there's new evidence that shows that the penetration or the adoption of both the internet and smartphones is related to or correlated with higher intolerance of uncertainty among young people. So people are more fearful of the unknown because they're living lives in a virtual sphere where there's hardly any practice with being uncertain, as you were just saying. And in fact, you know, many, many studies show this is the case. Just a brief search online is actually related to people emerging, thinking they know more than they do. Well, of course, when you're searching for something, hey, you're learning. So what's wrong with that? You think you know more than you. Well, actually, that's extremely a corrosive to learning itself. And if you really always think that you know more than you do, because you're kind of wedded to this world of knowledge that's endless and limited, and there's always an instant answer, then you're really not going to be able to know what you need to know next. And that's very important. That kind of Google hubris is really toxic. So I think that the internet and the where we live, you know, looks and feels very neat and pat. And of course, course, the tempo is one single tempo, instant answers. And that breeds what I think is a sort of over experiencing of heuristic thinking, that kind of shortcut thinking based on the past, based on what you know. We kind of gravitate toward, and the internet pushes us toward what's familiar, what's safe, what's the echo chamber. That again is just heuristic thinking. Whereas what is uncertainty, it's basically moves you away from autopilot. It moves you to the edge of what you know. And then there's a whole new frontier of growth and thriving. And in fact, being comfortable in uncertainty is actually correlated with resilience. If people are actually training people, psychologists are training people to be more tolerant of uncertainty, to treat anxiety, to treat a depression, to treat worry and many different mental disorders. Because if you can contend with uncertainty with skill, then you can contend with life, which is, of course, always going to be unpredictable and volatile and mutable.
Let's go back to our callers now. David is with us in Price County. David, hi.
Hey, hi. And hooked up with what you just were saying, Maggie, I think of it in terms of the concept of time, that you're uncertain now, but as you explore, maybe take some baby steps toward it, but are uncertain. But over time, the truth comes out, that you're going down the right path or not, and you can change and you can be adaptable, like you were saying. So I wonder if you could speak more to that idea of, and right, in our hyper vigilant society today, of always wanting the answer right now, and that's it. No, that's not the way it is.
David, thanks a lot for that call. Maggie, the idea of taking time to sit with that uncertainty.
Yes, I think that's such a great point, David. And in fact, it's really important I think of an uncertainty as not only a form of honesty, because it's waking you up to the world, but it's also an investment. I mean, the second most important part of uncertainty, other than this arousal, this wakefulness that it spurs you into better thinking, is that it's a space of possibility. It is, as I was saying, the opening up between the question and the answer. And one of the most wonderful examples of this is just the value of a pause for our memory and for gaining insight. It's really stunning now that when people pause, and I mean really just pause, not do anything, if they're pausing after learning, saying, passages of prose, and in an experiment, half the people just jump onto a video game as a kind of break, and others do nothing and don't even think about what they just learned, that actually allows the memories to be encoded into your mind. So a 5-minute pause boosts your memory for what you just learned by about 25%, which is stunning, even in people with Alzheimer's. And it's also related to these kinds of pauses, this doing nothing, this kind of living, stop the goal-oriented, stop the instant and answer sort of business. You're actually helping your mind gain insight, because your brain is curating and sifting and sorting that information, making connections. And that's what sleep and dreaming do in more fertile ways than even during the daytime. It's not a time of nothingness, the pause.
Thanks for that call. We are talking to Maggie Jackson about her new book, Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. Back to your calls. James is with us in Milwaukee. James, hi.
Hello there. I speak as one who faced a lot of uncertainty starting when I was 17. That's when I began to lose my sight. And a lot of uncertainty comes with that, because you have to adapt to things and you don't know what's going to come next, and you have to go on. And nevertheless, I embraced the uncertainty and kept going. I lost my sight when I was 27, but by that time, I'd enrolled in the UW system. I enrolled in UW Milwaukee. And
James, I'm sorry, we're just about out of time, but thanks a lot for the call. And you look at some people in the book, Maggie, who had a loss of a faculty that they may have had. In one case, it was somebody who lost the ability to calculate precise numbers, things like that. dealing with uncertainty in a situation like James's or others where there's a big change like that and how we adapt.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's really important to understand that there are limits to big limits to uncertainty. It's not the panacea. I'm not saying, oh, let's all be uncertain. There's a limit to uncertainty. You know, you don't want to remain in uncertainty all the time. It has its wonderful powers for when things are new and unexpected. But also, we don't want people to be uncertain about the core, their survival or whether their next meal is coming from. And yet, I would argue that uncertainty is a human right, because when you have the ability and the skill and the power and the time to be unsure a little bit, as we've been talking about, it's investment in future. And I think that was a wonderful, courageous story that James told about his accommodation and adaptation to his site and through learning to embrace uncertainty. Thank you so much for that.
Thanks for the call, James. And just our last minute, Maggie, leave us with a tip. When we feel that discomfort of uncertainty, how can we steer it down and make something of it?
Sure. Lean into uncertainty. That means know that it's uneasy, but the difference between people who can tolerate uncertainty and those who can't are that the people who tolerate it see it as a challenge. Lean into it. Know it's going to be stressful and expect the world to change, and then the possibilities open up. Don't see it as a threat, because actually, it's not the uncertainty that's the threat. It's our fear that's holding us back.
Maggie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Maggie Jackson, award-winning author and journalist. We've been talking about her newest book. It's called Uncertain, The Wisdom and Wonder of Being Unsure. Still time for you to share your stories about dealing with uncertainty, for better or worse, or your tips for dealing with it. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio.